Welcome back, everyone, to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Longer musical breaks today because Barry McGovern and I are talking off mic about poetry, Britain, T.S. Eliot, Robert Lowell. We talked about how Valerie Elliott, the widow Elliott, T.S. Eliot died in 1965, and Valerie Elliott died just last week at the age of 86, which means that she went a number of decades without her husband, but got to know his work very well, working with Christopher Ricks and others as the executrix of the Elliott estate, and especially the literary estate. Obviously, this conversation with Barry McGovern, who's the Granada artist in residence, could go in a great number of directions, all of them interesting to me. But we should also include those of you listening at home and talk a little bit more about this program. Now, Barry, you had differentiated the class that you were teaching twice a week during the day and then the play that you were directing. Did you have some of the students in the play who were in the class? And
yeah.
Tell me some more about
I'm teaching about 17 students, and I think 7 or 8 of them are in the play, and then the others obviously aren't. Some of the others are in other plays, because there's a lot of plays being done here,
I seem
to find, which makes it tricky sometimes to get people when you need them, but that's the way it is. But when you say differentiate, how do you talk about the...
So what was the class that you taught? What was the title of the class and your objectives for it?
It's just, I was told to come and teach acting, just I could do whatever I liked. But when I came, I saw it was like, it has DRA 120 or 122, depending on who you believe, A, realism. And I thought, what is realism, you know?
Right.
What is naturalism? What is any of these isms that are, these are words that are invented by academic people to suit their needs. And, you know, actors don't think that way. We just do the plays. So basically what I'm doing... is I'm doing scenes with them, I'm reading stuff with them, reading scenes with them. At the beginning, I had to find my feet. It took me a few classes to find my feet because I was doing stuff that was kind of a bit beyond them because I thought I was coming to teach acting students. But in fact, two of them are MFAs and in their late 30s or early 40s, I don't know around that. And then the rest of them are all kind of 19, 20, 21, 22 years of age. And some of them didn't know much about theatre but just are interested in acting as a subject.
Right.
And others are keen to maybe do it as a profession, although I'm not sure how many, but there are some. So I had a different kind of student body than I thought I would have. I wasn't quite sure. So it's been an interesting learning curve for me as much as for them. I don't know how much they've learned, but I've learned a lot anyway. Yeah, we do a lot of scenes on the floor because I'm not a theoretician. I'm some practical man. I think the only way you can act is by acting. So I think a lot of theories about acting are frankly nonsense. You know, there's a lot of stuff that goes around about you know, theory,
right,
and performance theory. That's all very well, and if people enjoy that, that's fine, but it wouldn't be for me. You know, I think it's a performance is what it is. It's performing, and acting is acting, doing.
Right.
It's not passive, it's active. So that's what I do.
My father was a stage director, and one of the things that I always enjoyed visiting as when I was a child is to see him give... watch an entire run-through of a play and then keep in his head a great number of notes for all of the different actors. And it sounds like if you're focusing on the performance that you might be doing something similar in terms of the feedback and the guidance that you give the young actors that you're working with. Do you have them do a scene and then you respond? Or
oh, I do. You're talking about class now rather than the play because there's a lot of actors' notes for the play.
Absolutely.
But in class we... It varies. I mean, one of the things we did over the last few weeks was I asked everybody to take a monologue and to bring any monologue they liked in and do it. And then they would perform it. I'd say, well, what do you think? And then I'd give my comments on it. And then we'd get somebody else. I'd pick somebody else. Now, I'd like you to do that monologue. And he or she would then do the monologue and we'd discuss that. And maybe a third. I'd say, well, any volunteers? And if there are no volunteers, I'd pick somebody. Or maybe I'd pick somebody anyway.
Right.
Because some people are very anxious to do a lot and some people are... bit more mousy and in the corner and not being forward to want to do something. So sometimes I'd pick them. But if somebody was uneasy with anything, then they don't have to do it, if they'd rather not. But generally, I try to spread it around a bit. But if people are very eager, then they can have more of a chance because if they want to do it, that's a good sign. Then we'd comment on that, and then eventually we'd get back to the first person to come back and do it again. Of course, if it's a comic monologue with a lot of comic revelations in it, it's not going to be so funny the second time around.
Right.
But that's the challenge, to even though you've heard it maybe two or three times with other people doing it, to do it again. So that was very useful. We've also done scenes from plays that a lot of the early stuff we were doing were scenes from plays that I picked that would be over a cross-section from Greek to Shakespeare to contemporary to Irish, English. We did a bit of work on Dancing at Lunasa, Brian Friel's play, and on Mountain Language by Harold Pinter, two very different plays, and I got them all as one of their assignments to do an essay comparing the way language was used, the subject of language in Pinter's Mountain Language, which is a very political play and a very brutal play, a very short play in four scenes, and Dancing at Lunasa, where the whole nature of dance, it ends with a wonderful monologue by the narrator Michael talking about how you know, language was no longer necessary because dancing had taken over, kind of thing, as a language. And then Father Jack, the brother who comes back from Uganda, who's been a missionary there, he has lost a lot of his language and has difficulty remembering simple words because he's been speaking Swahili mainly for 25 years.
Right.
And he's sort of gone native, and that's why he's really been sent back by his superiors. And so the nature of communication, the nature of how the five sisters in Donegal in this little small holding in 1936, how they reacted to going to a dance. And there's a famous scene in the play where they all tear into an Irish dance, and then the head, one of them says, "No, this is enough. We must stop doing this. This is kind of like, you know, going wild. It's the Dionysian thing again, you know."
Right.
And so there's... That was very interesting, the essays I got on that. And then another assignment was to get them to go and see Hamlet. The Globe Theatre of London did Hamlet at the Mondavi Centre there a few weeks ago. And I got them all to go to that. And one of their assignments was to write an essay on not a review of the play necessarily, although it could be that. It was just write an essay about your experience of going to this production of Hamlet, whether it's about the play, about the performance, or about the way the Globe did it, because they did it with lights on to replicate the sun, which illuminates their own performances, and
right.
So on and so forth. And there was only seven actors, so a lot of them were playing multiple roles and so on.
That's great. If you're just joining us, Barry McGovern is my guest, and he is the Granada Artist in Residence this quarter, an Irish actor and playwright. And I mentioned earlier that you also write songs, and I'm wondering if you could say something about your songwriting abilities and how that comes into this production of the play The Buckeye that opens tomorrow night.
Well, I have to correct you. I don't know where you're getting the information, but
oh, okay.
I am not a playwright. I have never written a play in my life, but I would be very happy to be called that if I did that. But I must correct the record on that one. I'm not a songwriter. I have a great love of music. It is mainly classical music. Apache John Coltrane, but I mean, although I love him too. There's only two types of music, the old adage, you know, good and bad.
Right.
So, I've done some stuff before at home years ago with a colleague. I did a couple of musicals, and I've written lyrics and music for theatre in the past, but I haven't done it for some time. But when I was asked to do this, there were some things I worked on at home in Dublin before I came here, and I set some of the songs, some of the choric sort of odes to music. But I've been blessed with Dan Cato Wilson, my musical director and arranger for the show, who has he's done the opening song of the piece, and he's done some fabulous arrangements for the play of his stuff and my stuff, and some sort of interlude bits and so on. And he's done a great job on that as arranger, and I've kept him very busy, and he's been very patient with me.
That's great.
You know, as a director, you change your mind a lot because it's an organic thing, and things need changing, and that's just the way, the nature of theatre.
Right. You're making discoveries late in the process. And it's always better to make that discovery than to
cutting out things that people have got, and maybe at some expense. Sometimes props or costumes are changing them because they have to be changed. I mean, I made a costume change only last night or the night before. It just had to be done, and got rid of a prop that cost a few dollars to buy, but it's the way it is. If it's for the good of the play, these things happen. That sort of waste is built in at the beginning. You have to.
Absolutely. Well, you're listening to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. We're chatting with Barry McGovern this afternoon. And when I say playwright before, I meant to say director, but he's a director and an actor. We're going to talk a little bit about his acting for just a few minutes. You're listening to KDVS, 90.3 FM in Davis. Irish actor and director Barry McGovern is here, and we've been talking about the production of The Buckeye that opens tomorrow evening and runs through, we think, Sunday, December 9th at the main Celeste Turner Wright Hall on the UC Davis campus. I encourage you to visit the website of theater and dance at ucdavis.edu to find out more about my guest, Barry McGovern, and about this fascinating production, which has a great number of modern elements. Do you find, Barry, that you need to talk up the fact that it's got like this rock and roll energy and theme to it, or that the play's not very long? What is it that draws American playgoers, to your understanding, versus, say, folks back home in Ireland?
You're asking me what draws American people to the... how would I know that? I'm not from here. But no, I mean, look, the version that Derek did, I just found it was a very kind of... When I say rock and roll version, I don't... I mean, my idea of making Dionysus a kind of rock and roll star type character, because he changes, he's godlike, he changes shape and so on. That was just an idea that you have to play it some way. And I'm not a great man for necessarily changing, plays and making, if they're set in a certain period, I usually like to see them done the way the author intended them to be done.
Uh-huh.
I know that people do things with Shakespeare and so on, because it's very old, and if you've seen, one Hamlet, you've seen it, you can see it many different ways, but there's a way of being true to the play. But I don't like sort of setting plays in mental hospitals or on the moon or something just for the sake. There's a cult now of directors making a statement and doing something with the play.
Right.
If you have to do something with the play, there's something wrong with the play. In this sense, we don't really know how these plays were done, so you've got to find a kind of a modern equivalent. And people often say about Shakespeare, why did you do Shakespeare in modern dress? Well, Shakespeare, in his time, they were always done in modern dress,
Yeah.
Maybe not Julius Caesar, but maybe they used togas, like for Rome, because it's such a stereotypical thing. But they generally did them in their own time, in their own period. It just seemed to me that there was an energy about this translation or version that had a youthful verve to it, put it that way. And I just wanted to get an equivalent in that in doing it, so that it would not be boring and not be kind of... There are some long speeches, but I didn't want them to be boring. I wanted them to be interesting. I wanted the music of the poetry to speak out.
Right.
And even though it's written in verse, it's such a loose verse you'd hardly even know. But there's great internal rhythm. There's at times rhyming couplets, other times there's a speech that would be, it's generally an iambic pentameter, strangely enough, a bit like our friend Shakespeare and mm-hmm. Marlowe and these guys, but the choric odes would be different. They're in a kind of a trimeter, a sort of a dum pa dum pa dum, dum pa dum pa dum, rather than that da 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 dum. So he varies them, and sometimes in a tetrameter, a four feet. I mean, you don't have to worry about this, listeners. This is just like part of the energy underneath it. You don't need to be aware of the technique.
Right.
But often it would end with a rhyming couplet the way Shakespeare would, like not only in his sonnets, but in things which
like
gives a lovely...
the end of a scene.
The end of a scene, exactly. So they had this lovely feel to it, this lovely music to it that I liked. So that was one of the reasons I wanted to give it this kind of energy. And a couple of the songs we put in, we give them a kind of a rock and roll feel because of the rock star god and the people who are following him, the groupies and so on. So it was just seemed an interesting thing to do.
Absolutely. And say something about the pageantry of this play. We were talking about sets and costumes. Say something about the sets that you're working with.
Well, I've been very lucky in that... I've had a wonderful set designer, Travis, who's pupil of John Iacovelli, whom I worked with in Gatto and up in LA. So that's how the whole thing came around. So he's done a terrific job. It's a kind of a very standard sort of set, but it's kind of like a Capitol building, because it's the Capitol building anywhere. If you look at all, we looked at all the states in America, and I think every single one of them, bar one or two, had this kind of typical one, you like the one here in Sacramento.
Like a big one with
or
a
up
dome.
We're not in Sacramento, no, Davis, but up the road in Sacramento. Or the dome, and the kind of, we got rid of the dome, but we have a kind of that kind of triangular, what do you call it, the pediment or everything on the columns and so on. So it's a kind of a stylized version of that. And then at the sides, there are two like towers where a lot of the chorus hang out. There are levels below the towers as well. And at one stage, there's a kind of an earthquake where the god Dionysus makes the building collapse. He's been taken prisoner, but of course he can do anything, so he lets himself be taken prisoner because he's pretending to be mortal. Then he makes the building collapse, so some of the columns moving and the pediment falls down and there's a bit of shaking, and the towers have those strange kind of lines that were on the Twin Towers in New York in 2001. and that kind of triangular thing, if you can imagine, they used to go up, and then there was this kind of, you know, I had to describe it, a kind of three out of the one. So there was a kind of a, so there's a little nod to that. So the whole building shakes and it's, they're in trouble. There's a kind of a nod to a kind of contemporary catastrophe, of which obviously 9/11 is the big one. Things like that, they're only very overt. They're not overt. They're very suggested in a very slight way. So, you know, we'll see how they come out. But it's been terrific. I mean, the sets, the workshop there, and the costume shop. There's such terrific facilities to get things done that it's, you know, a lot of professional theatres back home would envy the capacity they have to do things here.
That's great. And for a final question, tell me about what you've most enjoyed about working with the actors who appear in The Buckeye that opens tomorrow evening.
Well, I just love their energy. I love their enthusiasm. They've had a long day of classes and they come to rehearsals. So we're rehearsing from 6 to 10, ostensibly. Mm-hmm. I usually ended at 9 because we'd start about 10 past 6 and finish. Because once your work is done, your work is done. It's pointless going on past a certain time when you just feel it's done. Of late, of course, we have been going on till 10, and near, we have to let them go at 10:30, but we've been going like every night now, 10 past 6 they're in and ready to get going at 7, and it's after a long day, their commitment and their enthusiasm is fantastic. But above all, I think their patience, because they are very young people, most of them, and well, all of them are young, but some of them are extremely young, you know, 19, 20, 21, that kind of age. And they have remarkable patience, because they would have a lot of energy, and sometimes you might be giving notes and you have to calm down, folks, you know.
Right.
But it's incredible, the energy and the enthusiasm they bring to their performance. And that's what I've enjoyed most, and I shall miss them terribly when I go home.
Oh, I'm sure. Well, all of us will get to sample this enthusiasm tomorrow with the new production of The Buckeye. It opens tomorrow evening here on the UC Davis campus and was directed by our Granada artist-in-residence, Barry McGovern, visiting us this quarter from Ireland, as well as many other places that he has acted. Barry, it's a pleasure to meet you, and thanks very much for coming on the radio show today.
My pleasure. Thank you very much indeed.
Absolutely.